Welcome to this edition of Fishers and Farmers Neighbor to Neighbor. I'm PM Yonke. This program focuses in on cooperative projects all around the Upper Midwest with the goal of enhancing water quality. It's brought to you courtesy of fishersandfarmers.org and Saddle Butte Ag. Today we travel to Northeast Missouri and Pike County, where the Pino Creek tributary is located. It's part of the Lower Salt River, and it is considered one of Missouri's highest quality streams. The challenge with the Pino Creek tributary is how can you sustain the state's 200 fish species for the next 100 years? That was the challenge faced by Chris Williamson, District Supervisor for the Missouri Department of Conservation. Right away, Chris realized he had to figure out a new way to approach landowners to engage in the conservation projects. But everyone's busy, and trying to persuade farmers and landowners to make a long-term commitment to something like cover crops was problematic. Chris and I talked about how he approached those farmers and landowners to get them to buy in.
We'd had the same type of cost share programs and same type of best management practices out there. And so we really didn't have an idea, though, what's going to be our new thing that we're going to take to the landowners and try to sell them on, or what's going to be or the practice or idea that we can really work with landowners on to help improve or maintain this watershed. And so knowing that, we and not trying to come up with something new on our own, sitting around a bunch of biologists or people that work for the government trying to solve problems, what we did is we came up with the idea, we've got some ideas here. We've got some information. Let's get some landowners together in a room. And so we set up a place at a local restaurant, invited about 20 landowners that had worked with the NRCS or soil and water districts or the Missouri Department of Conservation in the past, and just a varied background, a lot of the agricultural landowners and a lot of producers. Mm-hmm. And so presented some basic information, our ideas, just as basic ideas, but more, it was more of a conversation, and it was more of, here's kind of what we're looking at. What do you guys think? What do you guys see as the issues? What do you guys see as the challenges of this project going forward? What do you see as opportunities going forward?
Sure.
And so it really turned into a great evening of just some conversations. We learned a lot. I think the landowner learned a lot. And from that, we kind of, one of the main topics that came out of that was there were several producers that were already started playing with or trying to incorporate cover crops into their operations. And there was a lot of questions around cover crops. There was something at that time that was just starting to take off. This was probably in 2013 when we had this meeting. So this is just really starting to get some traction in the area. But they have a lot of questions, lots of issues to work through. We're trying these guys incorporate
sure.
them into. So.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. Sometimes when groups come together, they've already been thinking about these ideas, maybe doing smaller projects on their own. Sometimes it can be about available resources and putting priority on those available resources. Tell me a little bit about how you and the group tried to attack that.
Yeah, so exactly. There was a couple landowners that had just a year or maybe were 2 years into it, had just started just experimenting on their place with small acreages, like a 10-acre corner of a field or something. And at that time, just sourcing the seed was an issue. They were having trouble finding the right seed that they were wanting to use, and they were just starting to really experiment with how to work this in their operation. So using that, we saw an opportunity. So it's, hey, these guys are looking for this. Cover crops have many benefits, not only to the producer, but to the watershed itself. And so it was one of those opportunities of like, we really need to capitalize on this. So we started, we were able to source some seed ourselves that very first year and just said, hey, here are five guys that would like to try something different or expand on what they've already been doing. Here's some seed. We're not going to charge anything for it. It wasn't that much money. We're just going to say, here, try it. And then we're just going to kind of, you know, I'll be around a couple times in the fall, a couple times in the spring, and we'll see how it kind of works for you. And then we'll, you know, use those experiences to spread, you know, the news. And so that worked pretty well the first year. We had some successes. We had some failures. We also had a public conservation area right in the middle of the watershed. And so the following fall, one of the people that's on the council was actually our permitted farmer on that area. And so we had some sunflower fields that we typically we'll mow those down right before dove season, which is September 1st. And then a lot of times those will set fallow all fall. But this, since this conservation area was right in the middle of the watershed, I worked to deal with him where we planted some cover crops right into those sunflower fields at about the first week of second week of September after most of the dove hunting whatever. And then the next following spring we used that as our basis for a large field day where we had those fields to look at with these cover crops that honestly at that point not a lot of people had seen. They didn't really, okay, is that a radish? Okay, I've seen those pictures of those, but I've never actually seen one in person. So so we used that, and that really springboards some stuff. And then we also did some field tours on some of the guys that we had shared some seed with the year before as well, and actually got to see some of their fields and have them present to the group or talk to the group about, hey, this is what I did, this is what I saw, this is how it worked, this is some of the benefits I'm seeing out of it.
Sure. You know, a lot of times when we get those demonstration plots, they're designed to do just that, demonstrate something new, help people feel like they're not the ones that are at risk or on the dime when it comes to success or failure. What about the community around these watersheds, maybe the non-farmers that still enjoy fishing or like that resource there? Did you hear much from them when this project was getting started, Chris?
Yeah. So we had several landowners in the area that owned property just for recreation. Several of them were out of town landowners. Several of them had retired and moved to their little, you know, private paradise that they'd purchased earlier and retired on it. And so those folks were interested in all the benefit, you know, all the stuff that we were, as far as, you know, they liked fishing on the stream, like, you know, maybe to hunt turkeys and deer. They just like watching wildlife. And so there was substantial interest in those, and still today it is. You know, we still got a lot of people in that watershed that are using it for recreation, and so they're really enjoying the benefits of the whole project.
Right. Yeah. And that's, like we said, living it and showing it, one of the best ways to get other people engaged in the process. So let's talk about what happened after those first couple of years, Chris. You know, projects like this can ebb and flow as far as involvement, enthusiasm, like you said, even sometimes availability of seed. Take me to where you are in 2021 now.
So, yeah, to get to where we are today, let me back up a little bit. So, as we continue that process of just trying these cover crops, experimenting with these things, and then using our landowners as you know, salesmen, I guess you'd say, where, you know, we would intentionally put some of these fields that were in cover crops in highly visible areas where, you know, if you're going to town, you're seeing these fields. And, you know, that everybody knows is a green field in December. You know, if you've got some corn stubble there and there's something growing in a green, everybody says, hey, that looks different. That's not what we normally see. So using that and word of mouth, and then continuing to host field days where we put some of the landowners, you know, just I can, as a you know, Department of Conservation employee, I can get up there and speak for hours, but I'm not going to be able to convince somebody near as easily as the guy that lives next door, the neighbor, the trusted guy that's been farming for 40 years. And so using that, you know, it always helps, you know, and where the neighbors is talking to the other neighbor and he's seeing what's going on. He says, okay, I'm going to try that. Here's how I did it. Here's what might work on your place.
Word of mouth. That's how we got it started. That's Chris Williamson, District Supervisor with the Missouri Department of Conservation in Pike County in Northeast Missouri, focused in on the Pinot Creek tributary. One of the farmers that was involved in those early conversations and visiting with other neighbors is John Schurter from Schurter Farms. We'll hear from him in just a moment. Fishers and Farmers Neighbor to Neighbor is brought to you in part by fishersandfarmers.org and Saddle Butte Ag. Joining us now, TJ Curtis, sales manager with Saddle Butte Ag. TJ, I've got to ask you, you know, the cover crop movement continues to gain momentum all around the upper Midwest. But with the growing challenges that we've seen this year, drought in some areas, too much water in others, how is your seed supply looking right now?
So right now, you know, our seed supply is good, Pam. We are going to see a slowdown in it, though. You know, and the drought in the Dakotas and up into the western part of Canada, the plains of Canada, is going to take some of the rye crop, and it's going to dwindle it. You know, so what I'm telling my growers right now, if you know you need rye, get it booked and get it ordered from your dealers or myself, so we can start moving it in July and August. Because the flip side of this coin is this: we don't have trucks. Trucking is just a nightmare right now. I just had a conversation with a guy in Colorado, and he said they came out and said there's a fuel shortage. A trucking company came out and said, no, it's not a fuel shortage. We don't have drivers to drive the trucks. Mm-hmm. We have fuel. We just don't have any way to get it to you. We're dealing with the same thing here right now. We are short of drivers. We are short of trucks. And so I'm telling my guys, earlier movement is way better. Get it on the list. So we got 2 months to get it to you, or a month and a half. Because you call me September 1, say I want 4 loads of cereal rye, it might be the middle of September before you see them. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm hoping we move it faster, but we're being very proactive. Same out of the west, out of our main plant. We're working really hard, intermodal and everything, to get seed here in the Midwest. And our warehouses in the Midwest, we're about busting at the seams right now. We've loaded up well here.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. You know, I'm starting to think for those folks that might have been considering cover crops this year, and now the concern about weather. How long can this cover crop seed theoretically lay in the ground, TJ, without any moisture to kind of get it activating? I mean, these are the questions, if I'm just thinking about getting into cover crops, that I'm wondering about.
So surface application, we always say 14 days. And it's not so much that it the dry weather affects it, it's the predator levels that eat it. And we see that a lot. I mean, we go out and we find seed that's been chewed on. And the beauty of the birds and everything is they eat off just enough at the end so it doesn't germinate. You know, so they really love doing that to us. So we always say about 10 to 14 days, and we got to have some action. So at that point, like I said, if we're born dry, vertical till with a Gandy box or something of that nature to get some seed-to-soil contact, no-till drills, whatever you might be looking at, is what we need to apply this stuff with, because we got to get it in the soil at that point if it's just bone dry. It will lay there. We've had stuff lay there all fall, and the next spring it takes off and germinates. But we got to get it in the ground. On top of the ground at that point, it's a smorgasbord you put out there for the mice and all the predators, and they love us.
You are right. They really do love us. Thanks, TJ. Good to catch up with you. TJ Curtis with Saddle Butte Ag. Like he said, if you're still looking to secure a cover crop seed, now is the time to reach out to the folks at Saddle Butte. Their website, saddlebutte.com, or look for BioTill Cover Crops and 360 Forage. They are bringing you Fishers and Farmers, Neighbor to Neighbor, along with fishersandfarmers.org. You know, when we were talking with Chris Williamson, District Supervisor of the Missouri Department of Conservation in Pike County, he mentioned how important word of mouth was to spread the message about getting involved in conservation measures to help protect the Pinot Creek watershed. One of the farmers that was in those early meetings, John Schurter, from Schurter Farms. He farms 3,500 acres in Pinot Creek watershed and was one of the very first to embrace what Chris Williamson was after.
We got together for our first meeting, which was very informal. We really, you know, he was kind of looking for things to do and, you know, what could you do to get people involved. And I told him about my experience with the cover crop, and, you know, everybody kind of seemed to be talking about that a little bit. I said, you know, that would be the way to reach, you know, the most landowners and without a big outlay of funding, you know, because we had limited funds, of course. And so that's kind of how it started. And we just kind of picked a small group out of who attended there and just trying to put a plan together and just kind of went from there, you know.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask you, though, John, since you obviously your mainstay, corn, beans, and wheat, with the way commodity prices have been some years, it can be tough to keep that commitment to conservation crops, cover crops. How did you manage to work your way through those opportunities.
In a way it is, and in a way it isn't. I mean, my main cover crop, I put the cover on after I harvest corn, and then everything that's in corn that goes to beans the following year, that is all in a cover crop of, you know, and it's usually a combination. It started out with mostly cereal rye, but, you know, I found out that too much rye, too many pounds to the acre, you got too much cover, and I had a couple experiences where, you know, couldn't get in the field, and, you know, you had rye 6 foot tall headed out, you know, where you're going to plant beans, you know, what do you do? And the first couple of years, you know, scared me to death, and, man, I can't do this. But I had a couple of neighbors that was trying to plant green, and so, you know, we started doing that, and, you know, last year, let's see, it was last year or the year before, I guess, we had a real rainy spring, and we had hundreds of acres that was in rye, and it had about 50 pounds to the acre on it, and it was thick. I mean, mm-hmm. But we was able to plant on through it, and mm-hmm. you know, and end up getting a good stand on almost all of it, except where it was really thick and, you know, laid over.
Right.
But anyway, it ended up, you know, we had 50, 60 bushel beans behind that, and my gosh, it had a tremendous amount of cover and almost too much cover because I went into corn with that the next year, and I'd, you know, kind of wanted to no-till into that and, you know, save all my mulch. And, well, we had an opportunity early, and so we went in and planted. The forecast was for 80 degrees and no rain, and so I think this will work. I knew it was just borderline, but went ahead and did it, and, you know, it turned out to be 50 degrees and rain. And and so we had, you know, 600 acres of no-till into that stuff that did not work very well. We had to end up replanting it all. So, you know, it doesn't always work, but, you know, the advantages are so much yeah. more than those opportune times that mm. pop up that are against you, or inopportune times, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, this year we've had 3 or 4 big rain events in the last month, you know, anywhere from 2 to 6 inches. And, you know, I planted all my soybeans into cover anywhere from 2 foot to 5 foot tall. And, you know, I have no runoff, you know, no chocolate water yeah. coming out of the field, you know. And right. so I'm tickled to death with it this year. I mean, you couldn't ask for it to do its job any better. But I've kind of changed my strategy. I no longer use 50 pounds of rye, which, you know, are still the local, if you go through Equip or something like that, still tell you put on 50 pounds, you know, if you want to get in this program. Well, you know, I tell them, you know, 50 is too much. You don't want that, you know.
Right.
But that's the way it is. So you can start diversifying, which I done last year. You know, I put wheat, rye, and winter oats on in a combination. That way, and the oats will winter kill out, so you don't have that much trash in the spring, and the wheat won't get as tall as the rye. And that worked pretty well with less pounds. But if I'm, you know, just doing it on my own and using rye, I'm down to 25 to 30 pounds the acre, and that's that works good in this area.
Well, like you said, John Schurter's along with us from Hannibal, Missouri, and he is making a perfect point. A lot of it is still trial by error. Tell me a little bit. I like how you said scared you to death when you start down these paths. How do you, fellas, how do the 10 landowners that kind of started the Pinot Council, do you get together and kind of, shall I say, hold each other's hands when you're mm-hmm. going through these educational opportunities?
I guess the Pinot Creek group itself, you know, which we did the cost share on the seed for several years, and then the conservation provided the seed, and a year or two ago, I think that funding run out, and so we're at a point now this year. Of course, last year we was going to try to do something, and then the conservation's kind of had its hands tied with the COVID, and, you know, couldn't get groups together and couldn't meet, so we actually went all last year and didn't hardly do anything. I mean, everybody was doing stuff on their own, but nothing through this. And so, you know, now we're back to the point, which Chris may have already said this, that we're going to get together and see where our next step is, you know, and I think maybe what you alluded to may be the next best step. If you got enough people doing it, but, you know, they wanted to go the next step, but, you know, they see this 6 foot rye out there that you're trying to plant into, and you just scared them. Oh, we can't do that, you know? So I think our next step in my mind would be to farm, you know, for this group to just put it out and get a word of mouth. Go to somebody's farm that has this cover crop on it and a crop growing in it, and just have a little round table in an evening, have a pizza and some beer, soda, whatever, and just sit around and, kind of go through, well, what'd you do? How'd you do this? Or how'd you get that killed? Or, mm-hmm. I think that would be the next step to go to get people that's wanting to do it. But, we had one farmer here that farms a lot of acres, and they put a lot of cover. They put, several thousand acres of cover crop in last fall. And man, I was glad to see that. But then they went and terminated it all fairly early. Mm-hmm. And then run a vertical tillage over it, and mm-hmm. which still is way better than, going in there and hitting it with a field cultivator a couple times and planting it. But, they really lost the advantage of controlling all this erosion on all these, because their stuff was dead and fell over, and by the time their beans got up, it was kind of disappearing. Whereas, if you left it up knee high, like mine is now, the 6-inch rain beat the old cover down, but before, my beans were 6 inches tall, but you still couldn't hardly see them out there.
Right. Yep.
But, and you get these big rain events, and between the beans and catching the trash as it's coming off the cover crop, it really stops the erosion. And,
right.
and so I think, the next step in my mind would be, small informal deals. It's, people like to hear what other farmers are doing. You get an expert in and tell them, this works here and this works here. And they say, well, is it going to work in my area? How are we going to make it work here? Well, I think just the hands-on, and you can see it. We've had a couple field days here, and people say, man, how'd you get that,
Right.
Actually, when Chris first came through, he called me. He said, man, I got a little bit of extra money here. If we don't use it, we're going to lose it. He said, for a grazing system. And this was just about 3 weeks before harvest, and he said, if you can get this in, but you got to have it in the next month, I said, man, I've kind of been wanting to do something anyway. So anyway, we jumped on it. And anyway, we put in a rotational grazing system here with some funds, mm-hmm. funding that they had to help with it. And since then, we put in two more systems, one of them on our own and one of them with my son-in-law did with a young farmer, beginning farmer equip thing, and so we've been doing that part of it too with the cattle by you almost get a third more efficiency out of your pastures doing that. And the main thing is being able to get your water to where it needs to be, but it don't work on every farm, but you can sure make it work, and you can really increase your efficiency that way too. And if it works out, if you're just right where you can get a, one of your fields that you put this cover crop into and where you can rotate graze into that too, it really works good.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But I think in my experience, farmer to farmer, person to person is the best. I mean, you have field days, you get, it's good too, cause people can come and actually see, but of course webinars is a big thing these days, and, do everything virtual. I'm a little old fashioned, I guess. I mean, I'll do that, but you just talk to so many guys, they start watching and lost interest, turned it off, mm-hmm. So, the hands-on and one-on-one, maybe you don't get as many people there, but the people you get there, you're going to do more good with, for sure.
Neighbor to neighbor, peer to peer, that's what works best for John Schurter from Schurter Farms. Remember, he's got 3,500 acres, all of which are in the Pinot Creek watershed. That's why he was one of the first to partner with Chris Williamson, district supervisor for the Missouri Department of Conservation, to continue to explore conservation ideas and cover crops for his land, now an example for other farmers and landowners around him. If you'd like to find out what's happening today with the Pinot Creek watershed, remember it is a part of the National Fish Habitat Partnership. That website, fishhabitat.org, or just search Missouri Conservation Pinot Creek, and you'll see upcoming events and activities there. That'll do it for this edition of Fishers and Farmers Neighbor to Neighbor. You can hear previous programs with watershed projects around the Upper Midwest online, fishersandfarmers.org. And also, thank you to our friend TJ Cartis from Saddle Butte Ag for joining us on the broadcast. My name's Pam Yonke, and that is Fishers and Farmers neighbor to neighbor.